Siren Radio.
We thought it was going to be difficult to effectively top the usual launch of the show with Gabriella Peralta delivering the exquisite broadcast for the citizens of Lincoln from Gibraltar. As I say, something that folk in Los Angeles, Cape Town, Athens and many other parts of the world are just keenly awaiting, even in terms of parts of Surrey. And yes, I'll say it again, Dawn Harris actually travelling all the way from Surrey to the joys of Lincoln yesterday. First ever trip to Lincoln.
That's dedication, definitely.
Just actually, I'm very impressed. Clearly, she's learnt from the best. She's learnt from Emma Tinson, who is about to deliver the weather forecast for Lincoln from Surrey, England. Emma, the microphone is now yours.
Fabulous. Well, I think it's going to be a lovely day. We're going to have highs of 11 degrees centigrade, lows of 3 degrees. And it's going to be sunny and breezy all day long. So very nice.
To many people, the letters ET signify...
Yeah, even talking over Emma's jingle in that sort of way. We'll just let Phil go on, shall we?
At least she has a jingle.
Oh, come on now, Shirley. You know, you always start this whole process off. It's in hand. That's the important thing. Anyway, Emma, welcome back to the production. Ready Player One, is it on your list of movies to check out? Have you already checked it out? What are your thoughts on Spielberg's latest offering?
Oh, I've already read the book and seen the film. I'm very
She's
already there.
We
got it in one.
We knew that when it comes to culturally having that finger on the pulse, that is Emma Tinson's forte. So, as we said, Richard Fitzwilliams pretty much enjoyed it.
He gave it a 3 out of 5, was it?
3 out of 5. I'd go sort of 8.5 out of 5, 8 to 8.5. Kind of similar to Black Panther for different reasons. I think there were different areas on that.
Same, but different.
Yeah, and we've already seen some of the online reviews which have kind of been polarised, to put it mildly. Particularly like, did I say, the moment with Chucky in the movie. But what, pray tell, did you make of the whole thing, Emma?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it, actually. I think it's obviously a great film if you're a fan of gaming or any 80s pop culture. It's just a big nostalgia fest, basically.
Even though you weren't born at the time, Emma, of course.
Exactly. Yeah. But it was a fantastic film. It's actually quite different to the book. They changed it quite a lot because some things in the book wouldn't have worked right on film. But I think they did a really good job, and I think it's really going to appeal to the kind of young adult audience. So, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was very good.
Well, there we are. So, and if we were asking you to score the issue, where would you actually put your scorecard out of 10, for instance?
Out of 10, I'd probably say 7 or 8 out of 10.
Yeah.
Nice.
Isle of Dogs was the other key thing which was actually spoken about as I passed the telephone over to Shirley. He's probably going to take a message just to confirm that we will be coming through. Let me just sort of double check this whole sort of sequence.
Looks like a weird number.
Very exciting. It's probably just somebody confirming that we're actually doing a little link with them, actually.
Okay.
A little bit of action adventure there. Isle of Dogs. Would you be going to see Isle of Dogs at all? Emma.
I have actually already seen that as well. I saw it at a preview.
Nice.
She has one of those limitless Odeon cards.
She's in the business. Yeah. She's in the business. So she gets an awful lot of freebies. If you could actually take that little message and we'll sort our way through this whole process. Sometimes you get sort of press agents who sort of panic. They sort of think, what's going on with respect to the whole sort of line of life, etc. So Isle of Dogs, did you actually sort of find that another one which you'd say, yeah, that was good. Did it make you go, was it one of Wes Anderson's finest?
Yeah, I mean, I love Wes Anderson films. They're so quirky and brilliant. And I think this was another great one. It had an amazing cast as well. It was one of those films where you look at the cast list after seeing the film and you go, oh, that was that person.
You got your Bill Murray, you got your Scarlett Johansson, you got so many folk there. You got your guy from The Joys of Breaking Bad as well. It's amazing. It's just
It's absolutely brilliant. And I thought it was a great film as well. It's very true to Wes Anderson's quirky style, and I just thought it was really, really good, really entertaining.
So it's win-win. Are you psyching yourself up for the movie that's been over 10 years in the making, Avengers Infinity War?
I am, of course. I'm very excited. I keep trying to not watch the trailers too often. But I'm very excited for this. I think it's going to be absolutely amazing. And I just hope that no spoilers or anything like that are released, because I think it's going to be a great story. And there's
part one of two. Part one of two. Second part will be coming out next year. So yeah, it's worthwhile.
Exactly. So I wonder if we're going to get a bit of a cliffhanger.
I suspect those Guardians of the Galaxy could just be arriving just as we move into a whole new phase. But still, enough of such excitements. As Gabriella Peralta, who hadn't seen a single Marvel movie before Black Panther, she didn't understand the whole point of the end credits, really. She just wanted to get up and go. It happens. But we will look forward to that with keen excitement. Now, as I say, lots of things to pack into the production. So, Emma, a little bit shorter than normal, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme this morning?
I have indeed. Thank you very much.
Excellent. So can we look forward to connecting with you again in about 7 days from now?
Yes, of course you can.
Yay! The Girl's Guide to Growing Up Great, a positive, empowering guide to puberty for girls aged from 10 years upwards. It's the kind of book which, if it hadn't been written, you would write it yourself. Isn't that right? Ace author Sophie Elkin. How are you, Sophie?
I'm very well, thank you. What a lovely introduction.
Oh, very important. Now, say, as somebody who's worked within the media, within public relations, communications and so on, this is at the heart of why you came up with this whole notion of the Girl's Guide to Growing Up Great. Finding a guide to puberty for your own great girl, you've got to find one with empowering messages, straightforward information, kindness, humour and empathy. So write it yourself.
Well, yes. I mean, it feels a bit helicopter mother when you put it like that, but that's basically what happened. I was looking for a book. I'm a great believer in the power of books, and I couldn't find one that just seemed to hit the right note, that captured the zeitgeist, that was about, yes, empowering young girls and giving them the skills and the information and the confidence and allowing them to question. So, yes, I wrote it myself. Well, not quite by myself.
Well, almost. I mean, you've got a trio of wonderment there. You've got yourself, Sophie. You've also got Laura Chastey, and indeed...
the Maddie Podicetti.
Thank you, exactly.
And lovely Flo Perry, who did amazing illustrations.
Precisely. Shaylee McKenzie, as somebody who's born in South Africa and graduated from the University of Lincoln and so on, any thoughts from yourself on the Girl's Guide to Growing Up Great, or questions indeed for Sophie?
Yeah, no, this book looks really interesting. I wish there was something out like this when I was younger. I mean, there's bits that you can write in and take notes, and
yeah.
It's just really interesting because we never did anything in school about what it means to be a girl. So periods were never spoken about. And it was just something that kind of happened and you were a bit embarrassed. So I think having this tool is really, really cool. I mean, what's your inspiration for writing something like this?
God, thank you so much. That's just amazing to hear because, you know, you have this idea, you put it out there, and what you've said sort of reflects back exactly what I wanted it to be. So thank you. As I said, it was finding something for my own daughter that you know, sort of seemed to break down the taboos and just be quite no-nonsense, but kind and funny as well, and just give her and give all young girls that sort of information. You know, I think I say in the introduction or something, forewarned is forearmed, and I, you know, I'm a firm believer in that.
Definitely.
The whole notion of again, positivity and so on, it's something we like all our children, I think, to a certain extent, to benefit from this point of view. But, Sophie, clearly, life in the 21st century, some might say, with social media ever-present and so on, substantially different from, shall we say, back in the day where we had a kind of very gender-biased scenario and most young girls would probably read The Bunty or something. There we are, etc. So, you know, getting that balance between being cool and avoiding being preachy, was that something that you kind of worked hard on together with Maddie and Laura and indeed Flo?
Very much. I mean, that was at the top of our minds while we were writing, and that was that sort of preachy element was the thing that we wanted to avoid. You know, some of it, you know, it shouldn't sound gross and it shouldn't be things that you laugh at or that you feel embarrassed by, but some of the words used, some of the official sort of terminology does feel really awkward, and some of the books seem to sort of put it in such a way that, I mean, I felt like I was dying inside when I was reading it. So I couldn't imagine being 10, 11, 13, 14 and feeling like it was someone talking directly to me. And what we really tried to do was be that sort of, I think when you're growing up, there's always your friend's mum. You know, there's always a friend who's got a mum who's really cool, who you can sit and chat with. And we wanted to try and be that person. So we were definitely mums. There's definitely sort of an idea of responsibility in there. But what we're trying to do is just be that other friend's mum that kind of knows the score and you can talk to her even if you can't talk to your own mum.
It's released today, of course. This is launch day for The Girl's Guide to Growing Up Great. It is available via the usual channels online and indeed in bookstores and so on.
That's right, yes, thank you.
Excellent, this is great stuff. Shaylee, any other thoughts you'd like to add?
No, it's very true how you portray. I always found when I was growing up it's really difficult to sit down and talk to my mum about stuff. And there was always my best friend's mum that I could sit and have a chat with over a cup of tea. And she would give me motherly advice.
So
to have a book like this where if you're not confident enough to speak to somebody about it, it's sort of a guidance.
That's it, and I really like the fact you picked up on all the little bits that you can fill in and do yourself. You know, it's your book, and the idea is, you know, whoever's reading it can have it in their room, they can dip in and out of it, they can make it their own, and it's like a little toolkit, if you like, that is just, you know, when certain bits become relevant, you can go and read about them. And otherwise, you can just enjoy the little quotes from the other girls of the same age or the older women who've been through it. So, thank you. That's really nice to hear.
It just works perfectly, you see. It's that balance between London, Oxford, a husband, daughter, two cats. It all fits together in terms of producing the whole thing. The Girl's Guide to Growing Up Great, written by Sophie Elkin with Laura Chastey, Dr. Maddie Padicetti, and illustrations, as we mentioned, by Flo Perry. Out now. Sophie, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic debut on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition today? Has it been okay for you?
Oh, it's been great. Thank you so much. I've really enjoyed it, and it's been just a pleasure to be able to talk about it.
Well, that is duly reciprocated, so I'm going to ask you the second question. Will you be kind enough to return in the not-too-distant future and keep us appraised of how The Girl's Guide to Growing Up Great is continuing to actually impact and echo and resonate throughout society?
Oh, I'd absolutely love to. Thank you so much for asking.
I think a round of applause for Sophie. Yay!
Thank you.
and with recent research into the amount of sugar that's comprised of muffins, clearly Echo Beach and Martha and the Muffins opens up a whole new line as we head towards the introduction of sugar tax, and indeed why there's a spike in Britain's sweet tooth. Understandably, this is a bit of a cause for concern with obesity and a whole variety of other things, and we're delighted to welcome two wonderful folk to actually share some thoughts about this. First of all, nutritionist extraordinaire Anita Bean. Good morning, Anita.
Good morning to you.
And the equally extraordinary Chief Executive Officer of Vita Coco, that would be Giles Brook. How are you, Giles?
I'm very well indeed.
Excellent. Anita, let's talk to you first, because we've heard a great deal about this. We've used the strap line on the station beforehand, sugar is the new nicotine, that is something which seems to be there. There's this whole notion that if we have a couple of muffins, that's it, our sugar allowance is actually gone completely. I was shocked at the recent survey that suggested, you know, some of the sugar that's comprised in fairly innocuous foods, etc. Oh, I'm being healthy, I'm having a blueberry muffin. No! is it just a case of ignorance? Is it a case of we're being sucked into this whole notion of, yes, we're going to take more sugar, etc.? How can we actually sort of work through that process?
Yeah, I think, you know, the fact is that a lot of people still eat too much sugar, and a lot of people are still very confused about sugar. What we know from this survey, which was carried out by Vita Coco, is that more than half of people, 51% anyway, are still very unsure about the sugar recommendation. They don't know what it is or how much they should be having. So there's probably quite a lot of work still to be done by nutritionists in terms of raising awareness. But if there's one good thing that might come of the sugar tax, which will be introduced tomorrow, is that it will refocus people's attention. And I think it will hopefully make them more aware of the amount of sugar that's in drinks and food that they're eating. And it should encourage people to look more carefully at their choices and choose lower options. And, you know, drinks in particular are quite a major source of sugar for a lot of people, particularly young people, teenagers, children. So the idea is that it will get people to re-examine their options.
Shaylee, you've obviously been a student, you're now working out in the outside world, the graduate world, and so on. Does what Laura, what Anita's been saying there, does it resonate with yourself?
Oh, 100%. And I'm really, really glad as well that they brought in the new law where that you get ID'd for energy drinks, because they are a huge source of sugar and caffeine, which, I mean, I've seen 12-year-olds drinking these energy drinks, and it's just astounding. But in terms of sugar, I think it's just education, like you say, Anita. It's knowing what's in our food and what it is we're actually putting into our bodies.
We often use the line that actually if you have a top-of-the-range automobile, you wouldn't actually expect it to go very well if you put sugared water into the whole process. And I'm sure you'd agree from that perspective, Anita. Let's turn now to Vita Coco, because, Giles, I suspect you might, like some superheroic character in the background there, saying, it's all right, my children, everything's going to be sorted now. This is the solution. Talk to us a bit about Vita Coco and how that can conceivably actually help in terms of a choice of a healthier lifestyle.
Yeah, well, Vita Coco is 100% natural coconut water, and we offer a much lower natural sugar alternative to traditional soft drinks. So to give you an idea, roughly, coconut water has around about 40 to 60% less sugar and calories than a juice or smoothie. It also contains naturally occurring electrolytes, and electrolytes obviously is what helps enhance performance of your body, but also during kind of activity as well. So therefore, those people who are used to having the artificial synthetic sports drinks and energy drinks, they can make a natural switch to something like coconut water because it's naturally isotonic through the electrolytes. And we're really promoting, you know, coconut water as a great natural low sugar alternative, but also really trying to help consumers overall understand a lot more about sugar in drinks overall, and helping them really understand so that they can make more informed choices when they're looking at making their drink choices.
And Anita, does that kind of resonate with yourself, actually? That, I mean, for those of us who sort of switched to kind of, obviously, Vita, it's tomato, effectively. but in terms of that, is this something which inevitably is going to be good, or is there going to be a little sting in the tail halfway down the line? People suddenly say, ah, you thought it actually contained this, but it's got this much amount of sugar in there.
No, I think what's already happened, actually, with the threat of the sugar tax so far, is that a lot of manufacturers have been forced to reformulate. So they've lowered the sugar content in their existing products, and also they've come out with some new lower sugar drinks. So we've now got a much greater choice as consumers. We've got the choice. Obviously, we've got the Vitacoco coconut water drinks, and we have now got a whole array of reduced sugar drinks. Obviously, we've got water, but there's so much more. So I don't think that there's going to be a downside in that we've got more choice than before, so we can still enjoy our favourite drinks. It doesn't always have to be water. So hopefully people, it will ultimately result in a lower intake of sugar. Whether or not this will lower obesity rates is another question, because at the moment there isn't any hard evidence that that's going to be the case. But if it does get people to start altering their eating and drinking behaviour, then it's probably going to be a good thing.
If I can just add to that as well, is that I think what the government's done here is great, because it's forcing manufacturers who do have products that have a high sugar level, that it's forcing them to make changes which is to the benefit of the consumer. But I think from our perspective, we're exempt from the sugar tax. But actually, from my perspective, we make natural healthy beverages, and in some countries, healthier products actually have lower VAT rates. And I think one of the things that the government can do, as well as penalising, it can also look at incentivising as well. And I'm hoping that at some point in time, we can get on the agenda with the government that, if they provided, a lower level of VAT, for example, on 100% natural, nutritionally dense products, we would look to pass that 100% on to the consumer. So I think they can incentivise as well as penalise.
A win-win situation, it would seem. Shaylee, any final thoughts?
No, I was just thinking in terms of incentivising as well, like with the environment, obviously they're bringing about this new plastic where they actually charge you for plastic bottles and stuff. In terms of sugar tax, how much extra will people be paying?
So, I mean, I'll give you the rough statistics. And obviously, at the moment, that if you've basically got more than 5 grams of sugar, it'll basically be an 18p per litre increase.
Wow.
If you've actually got 8 grams or more, it's actually a 24p per litre. Now, I think what's very important is that suggests that that gets fully passed on. But what I do hope is that those other manufacturers and also those retailers who sell those brands to consumers, between them, I'm also hoping that they're looking to try and offset that as much as possible, so therefore the consumer isn't penalised. And I know, for example, one of the UK leading supermarkets, even before this tax came out, they made a very strong stance on soft drinks and sugar levels, and they got all their drinks changed and their range assortments changed to lower sugar alternatives before this came out. So it is a big amount. But I guess my question and my challenge is that, there is a way to produce drinks which are much lower sugar but shouldn't actually be susceptible to this tax. And, like ourselves, we do a natural, healthy beverage, and that doesn't obviously attract any tax at all. And I think people, and we're seeing it the whole time, as consumers are continuing to switch to natural, healthier alternatives, importantly ones that still have a great taste, because, the whole thing about having a juice, a soft drink, a coconut water, is you want to be rewarded. It's a treat. And I think, it's part of life. Not everything is just about having something that's completely healthy. You want something that, that's both, makes you healthy but also very happy as well.
Quite right, too, and we don't want a treat that's going to kill you, which is another line entirely. In terms of further information, Anita, where would you suggest we would point our listener?
Yeah, well, if you want to get more information about the sugar tax and what it means and which drinks will be covered and that kind of thing, then go on to government.co website. So everything's on there. And obviously, if you'd like more information about the Vitacoco drinks, then go onto the website, which is
vitacoco.com. Yeah.
I still prefer Vita Coco for some reason, but we'll debate upon that. And also, I mean, after you are the chief executive, you should know how to pronounce it.
We don't mind at all. It's Vita or Vita. And I think our brand was born on the beaches of Brazil. It's a relaxed brand. Consumers can say Vita Vita. We don't mind.
Well, there you go. Well, two final questions for both of you. Have you had a reasonably interesting and healthy telephonic link with us this morning, Anita and Giles?
Oh, we've both got cups in our hand with no sugar in.
Nice, that's what I like to see. You see, no Julie Andrews, no spoonful of sugar, that's been axed. So do the Archies and sugar. We'll work our way through that. Would you be kind enough to both return then in the not too distant future and keep us appraised of how Vita Coco is continuing to lead the way in this whole side of things, and obviously from our nutritional point of view, Anita, keep us updated on that as well.
Definitely.
Absolutely. Thank you for your time.
Keeping a healthy lifestyle, healthy mind, healthy body can only be enhanced by actually attending such awesome events. And I say again, awesome events such as the Harrogate Spring Flower Show. Shaley, of course, you were with us for the Autumn Flower Show, back, of course, strangely enough, in the autumn. Are you looking forward to a return to Harrogate for the Spring Flower Show?
Oh, 100%. No, it was amazing last year, say.
Last year was amazing. This year it's going to be even more wonderful. Isn't that right, show director Nick Smith?
Good morning, Alex. Yes, hopefully that's right.
Of course. Listen, you've got plant nursery pavilions. You've got shed talks. Every man needs a shed. No. Spring Show Gardens, Secret Sheds. Open the door to new possibilities with the new feature, Secret Sheds. Sorry. It fits in quite nicely, actually, Nick, because in a few moments' time, we're going to be talking with a former GCHQ senior analyst, Cameron Cahoon, talking about why lots of British people actually want to be spies. So presumably they need to have the secret shed to actually be part of that.
Everybody needs to have a secret shed anyway.
Exactly.
It's a thing that everybody wants. That place you can go to at the bottom of the garden and nobody knows you're there.
Yeah, exactly. And I think if you're in the spy business, perhaps a secret shed with a secret shred.
Nice. Didn't Roald Dahl write in a shed?
He wrote it all over the...
That's very true.
He did actually do the adaptation for You Only Live Twice, which was something I didn't expect to actually roll out at this time of the day, 9:33 a.m, when we're featuring the awesome Nick Smith. But there we are. Life continues. So how has it been, Nick? I mean, I say this every year, but it seems as though suddenly, it's almost as though the winter never happened. We kind of have the autumn, bang, straight enough, we're into the new season.
Well, it seems like that. I mean, we've had some pretty grim weather the last few months, but we've really, you know, today the sun is shining and we're really getting the sense that spring is on its way, and that's great because that's what we want people to think and come along to the show and experience it.
We have what we refer to at Siren Radio as the official start to the spring season with Countryside Links at the Lincolnshire Showground this coming Sunday that we'll be attending. But, of course, clearly that's just the build-up for this amazing 26th to 29th of April event called the Spring Show. And... presumably the showground is already looking pretty much on form for another tremendous event.
Well, it's just starting now. We're going to start in the next week or so with the marquee structures because they take 2 weeks in themselves just to erect. So there's a huge amount of structure to build in preparation for our 55,000-60,000 visitors across the 4 days. So we're really looking forward to that build.
From the website, Mrs. Kathleen Jones in the USA, a fantastic show from Newton Aycliffe, a strange part of the world, somewhere in the northeast of England. My wife and I attended the Spring Flower Show. Love my visit to the Spring Flower Show. I mean, just some of the... you cannot... go to the Harrogate Spring Flower Show and leave without a smile on your face. I mean, I think that's something which is to your credit, Nick, and indeed Camilla and the whole sort of team, etc., because it does, you know, there's even Pod, let's face it, nothing to do with iPlayers or various other bits and pieces, even Pod has something for the little ones to enjoy.
Pod is very much an analog person, I think, rather than a digital person. Yeah, Pod is our sort of mascot for children and mascot for families and schools and so on. And it really goes down well at the show. It's just an activity for children to get involved with and for their parents too. You know, it attracts everyone. This year, Pod's building houses. He's building small scale houses to make a greenhouse. So he's bringing the outside in.
Well, Shaylee, I know you're probably still recovering from the size of the autumn vegetables.
Those pumpkins and those leeks, they were insane.
So,
you can make some serious leek and potato soup with them.
Psyching yourself up for the Springflower Show, what questions would you like to put to Nick?
Yes, so obviously you're the show director. How many hours do you have to spend preparing for these shows?
Well, we normally start the preparation, the planning, about 18 months in advance of each one. So that would be things like the tickets and the leaflets and so on. They all have to be prepared quite a way in advance to get the promotion right, because obviously when you think about it, a lot of groups, a lot of coaches and things like that, they book a long time in advance to come to the show. So we need to make sure that all that advertising and all that preparation is ready for them to be able to buy tickets.
That's really cool, yeah.
I've also noticed that, slowly but surely, there are various other flower shows emerging in various parts of the country. For me personally, there can only be one flower show, so I don't know why other people are actually trying to actually compete with that whole process. But is this something where you're seeing various spin-offs? Because clearly one of the charitable aspects of the North of England Horticultural Society is it does actually help seed money for various projects for both schools, education and otherwise, really.
I like what you did there, Alexis. I like what you did with the scene.
I thought you'd appreciate that, Nick. Yeah.
But yes, that's absolutely right. I mean, we've been going for over 100 years now, so we like to think that we get something right in attracting our visitors as we do year on year. And yes, we're unique in that what we give, any profit that we make is given back throughout the north of England to charities, to community groups, to schools, to a whole range of groups, organisations and individuals which promote horticulture. So we like to think that it's a sort of circle, a great big sort of self-replicating circle that ensures that we've got horticulture in the future to come back to our shores for the public to enjoy.
The world is a circle without a beginning and nobody knows where it really ends, as Bert Bacharach once wrote. We might actually, if we feel moved in the whole system, actually engage in a little musical sing-song when we connect with you, Nick, actually at the end of April. So I think, you know, what the world needs now, apart from Love, Sweet Love, another Bert Bacharach classic, is clearly the notion of a musical version of the North of England Horticultural Society flower show. Suggest that to Camilla next time you have a meeting. Suggest to Camilla, I think we should have a musical version of the North of England Horticultural Society show.
I can see it now.
Yeah, exactly. I'll do jazz hands and we can do a whole range of other sort of factors for that basis. Let's progress, otherwise it's getting just too surreal, effectively. And we're going to deal with the Secret Service in a few moments' time. Nick, best place to go to for tickets? Presumably people can still book tickets online for presumably a discount as well.
Of course you can, yep. It's easy enough done. All you need to do is you can either go online to www.flowershow.org.uk or you can ring the number, which is 01423 546 157.
Marvellous. So, back in the day, we used to get people to give the number out again, but they can always play back the podcast. It's all find out the North of England Horticultural Society thing. Any final thoughts, Shaylee, from yourself in terms of the programme and other sort of aspects?
I'm just excited to see what you've got to offer.
We're always excited ourselves to see Shaylee as well. But this year we've got something really special. We've got greenhouse, we mentioned about bringing the outside in, but we're going to create some sort of installations that you would normally see outside, but they're going to be translated into sitting rooms, into bedrooms, into bathrooms. Wow. So we're really looking forward to that, because it's all going to be made of fresh foliage and fresh flowers. So that's going to be something a little bit different. We've got our secret sheds. We've got some fantastic show gardens. We've got all of those things that people really, really enjoy, with some twists and some modern interpretations on them as well.
It's going to be tremendous, quite literally tremendous in every sense of the word. Shaylee, go for it. The last two questions for Nick Smith, who's just produced another. He's just knocked it out of the park. I mean, we know effectively on safe hands, 9:30 slot, and Nick Smith, show director of the NEHS Springflower Show, absolutely spot on, perfect sort of routine for that. In many ways, he's almost doing the role of honour at this moment in time, really. Punching the sky. What are the last two questions, please, Shaylee?
Nick, have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us this morning?
Very much so.
Indeed. And in the not-too-distant future, can we rely on you to come back?
You certainly can.
And just to actually keep you thinking about the musical version of the NEHS Spring and possibly Autumn Flower Show, Sir Elton and Tim.
chihuahua.
It's fair to say, clearly, as we've asked a random selection of contributors to the Midweek Drive morning edition today, would they be a spy? They wouldn't necessarily say they'd be a spy if they were a spy. It might be a double bluff, might be a triple bluff, and so on. But it would seem, as we've said at the start of the programme, that British folk do think that they could be terrible spies. To begin to address this, we're delighted to welcome former senior analyst at GCHQ, Cameron Cahoon. Cameron, good morning. How are you?
Morning. Yeah, I'm very well, thanks. How are you doing?
Very good indeed. Now, this whole notion of the spy game, I think we've got so much to thank Ian Fleming and his counterparts for, and the whole notion of Tinker Tailor, Soldier Spy, and mysteries from that point of view. And, of course, historically, we were talking with Ian Lennox about Philby Burgess and MacLean and so on, and the sort of notion of spies and double agents and so on. The survey results that came out of this particular sort of package, which suggests that nearly 3 in 10 of us think that a deep state exists, a secret society of elites that runs everything. Is this something where at GCHQ, when you were there, you sort of thought,
No, that's ridiculous. You know, people, or is it a case of that's exactly what we want people to think?
I think it's the former. I don't remember ever when I worked there at the time thinking, oh, there's a deep state and all the decisions have been taken by a secret cabal of people who we don't know and behind the scenes. And no, I never thought that. But you know, it's an interesting theory. And I think there are instances in lots of countries throughout the world where there is an organ of the state, if you will, has gone a bit rogue and is doing things in their own way rather than responding to the, you know, elected officials, ultimately their bosses. So. I think it does happen.
I mean, this research, which has been commissioned alongside the release of a new 8-part espionage drama called Deep State with Mark Strong starring in the whole system there. Were you surprised by the notion that almost 3 in 10 of us said that they'd be a pretty bad spy, with a further 38% saying that there'd be no chance they'd be able to keep it hidden from their family? And some people, actually, 6%, saying they'd actually be quite pleased if somebody actually said, what do you do? And they say, I'm a spy.
My reading of this is it really speaks volumes about us as Brits, in that, you know, we're all quite confident, but we're also desperately honest a lot of the time, in that we say, you know, we think we could be spies, but a lot of us recognise might not be very good at it. So I think that's, you know, that's an interesting thing. And actually, one of the important aspects of being a spy is actually being honest and being open about, you know, your background, your personal life with your employer. But obviously, in the real world, you want to lead a bit of a double life and not, you know, go around shouting from the rooftops where you work.
Shaylee McKenzie.
I feel like espionage is always sort of glamorized. I mean, you've got like James Bond, who plays like a womanizer and leads like a really glamorous life. But
Sydney in Alias.
Yeah, I feel like in real life, being a spy would be very, very difficult. For me personally, if I was going to be a spy, it would have to be if I had no family, because then nobody could torture your family. I guess the part that's always interested me about being a spy is knowing languages. Because in my head, when you think of spy, you think of somebody who can speak like 10 or 20 different languages throughout the world.
You forget I got a first in Oriental languages at Cambridge, as indeed nice. Bond said in You Only Live Twice. Is that something which resonates with yourself, Cameron, that actually sort of a linguistic facility and a sort of aid of that is part and parcel of the toolkit you'd expect to be able to fit in with different cultures?
Of course. I mean, you need cultural awareness. You know, most spying involves looking at other countries, other regions that are not like Britain, and you need languages, you need that experience. But it's a team sport. You know, you need people of all different kinds. People are happy at cocktail parties. People are happy speaking languages and cracking codes or solving puzzles or, you know, working with computers. And, you know, that's what's interesting about, you know, Deep State that's on tonight on Fox at 9, is that it really comes across that there's so many different jobs in the intelligence world. And it ultimately takes a lot of people, not just one man running around with a gun.
The whole notion of Spooks, of course, great series back in the day, is very much connected with this whole system of the Secret Service. We talked about Bond, we talked about Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, Zero Dark Thirty, even Kingsman, The Golden Circle. Is it that kind of fascination we have with people who are not superheroes, because they don't have superpowers necessarily, but they actually show the kind of enhanced awareness of how, you know, they're working for the good guys, and actually what all spies actually need is a good bête noire, a good enemy to battle against, whether it's a rogue state, a different sort of notion, or just something which can actually keep Ethan Hunt's Tom Cruise character employed over the coming years?
Yeah, I mean, you know, spies go hand in hand with villains. It's you know, it's part of the job, and some of those villains are real, some of them are imagined. And I think what is exciting about, you know, the world of espionage dramas, and to some extent in real life, is, you know, knowing that there are bad guys out there and the challenge is to try and, you know, stop them and you know, crack their codes and before the, you know, they harm us. So there is you know, an element of truth between both the espionage dramas and reality.
If somebody is listening to this and saying, actually, I quite fancy working and serving my country within the civil service spy network, what advice would you provide to them, Cameron?
I think don't be too noisy on social media. Don't look like you boast about your life and your background. I think being relatively humble thinking about the skills that the country might need in the future. Think about the languages and the, you know, computer specialisms that are required, because, you know, we're, you know, if you think about it, GCHQ and the other agencies are in a war for talent with the big technology companies. And, you know, we'd all like to think that the next Alan Turing would be working for us rather than for a private technology company. So fingers crossed. And I would encourage anyone to go on the websites and have a look.
And in terms of data and analysis from that perspective, is it a case of it's almost heaven for GCHQ these days with respect to Facebook and other social media forms, harvesting data and such like? Is that something which you think... interesting times, or it's just a case of, well, let's just hand that over to our good friends in the Kremlin?
Well, if you think about something like Twitter, you know, a one in a million event is happening 1,000 times a day. There's a billion tweets a day. So there's so much data out there. And I think the problem for all the agencies is you need to be careful about what questions you're actually asking. You know, who are you actually the government doesn't have the resources or the need to look at everybody. It's about trying to think about who does represent a danger to society or a threat. And that involves a lot of careful analysis, and it's difficult to look at everyone, almost technically impossible, really.
Are you looking forward to deep state yourself?
I am, yes. Yeah. So I've actually had a little look at episode one. Fantastic, fast-paced, a bit like the kind of Jason Bourne type, very gritty, and a really exciting drama, and I think, you know, I'm sure it will captivate more people into the world of espionage.
And clearly, it's former senior analysts. So go on, Cameron. Have you ever been tempted to effectively write your own tale, obviously using a pseudonym? Who knows? Cameron might not even be his real name. Shh. In a secret shed somewhere elsewhere where you actually say, this is how I'd actually sort of develop this whole piece.
I'd love to, you know, sit by the beach and write a Hollywood script one day. Don't get me wrong. So maybe in the future. Who knows? But... have enough time to do that in the day. So there's lots of inspiring events, let's say, happening around the world at the moment. So plenty of content to lead off from.
Absolutely. I mean, you've got your pals in North Korea. We've got the Chinese situation. We've got, I mean, what's happening in the White House? It's wonderful.
Who knows? Yeah.
It's just so much fun. That's before we even start talking about Operation Cobra and various other bits and pieces, but that's another line entirely. Cameron, it's been fantastic sharing some thoughts with yourself today. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link? And don't worry, that's not a code phrase. I'm not using any euphemism, etc. And we won't expect to meet you somewhere outside Lincoln Station wearing a white carnation. Sorry, it's an old school routine. Has it been okay for you, Cameron?
Yeah, that's great. That sounds good to me.
Excellent. So I take it, well, we'll connect again in the not-too-distant future, perhaps?
We will do. Look forward to it.
siren listener. We expect you to die. Well, we all will, sooner or later. Thanks to Gabriella Peralta from Gibraltar. Thanks to Richard Fitzwilliams from London. Thanks to Ian Lennox from Tyneside. Emma Tinson from Surrey. Sophie Elkin from Oxford. Nick Smith from the North of England Horticultural Society Springflower Show in Harrogate. And, of course, Anita Bean and Giles Brook are talking about Vita. They didn't really mind when all was said and done. It's great stuff. And certainly thanks to Cameron Cahoon for wrapping up the programme with a nice spy-themed production there. That's it, Shaley. We have concluded the first Midweek Drive morning edition of April 2018.
How exciting. I feel like it's been a very fun-filled event today.
Well, there are some positivities coming across there, as we always like to feel, are on a weekly basis here on Siren Radio. Coming up at 7 o'clock this evening, we will be tuning in to another edition of Sound and Nick's Vision, and it's a special dedication to Nick's father, actually, later on today.
Oh, so how sweet. So, looking forward to it.
It's a very good show, and that will be happening, as I say, on Siren Radio. Is there a spy way of actually... Well, obviously, if we're a spy thing, we won't actually have any particular catchphrase.
We would just disappear.
We would just disappear. we would just sort of work our way through that process and, vanish into society. I'll take us up to the news. It's Pray For Me, The Weeknd, and Kendrick Lamar. So have a splendid, awesome Thursday. I think spring has definitely sprung. And we will keep you appraised next week, of course, of our adventures at Countryside Links, which is happening this Sunday at the Lincolnshire Showground, Lincolnshire Agricultural Showground. We'll be talking about that and more as we head through to next week. Be seeing you, Shaley.
Be seeing you, Alex. Alive again. You know I'll ride again. It's all the same. Tell me who.